Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We are standing by this hour as President Obama and Vice President Biden get ready to announce their plan to curb gun violence. But let's look at the mental health provisions in New York's new gun law and talk about whether they pit those who want to restrict access to guns against those who want to expand access to mental health and protect the rights of people with mental illness. Sarah Stieverman is Director of State Policy for Mental Health America. She was on the show with us in the days just after the Newtown shooting to help crowdsource mental health policy ideas. And I'm not sure she's so crazy with what Governor Cuomo in the New York State Legislature landed on. Sarah, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me.
First, what's been the first 24 hours reaction from your group and others in the mental health community to the New York State law?
We are concerned, as it would put it lightly. We are dismayed at what has come out of this law. We have all sorts of good ideas that we spoke about in December, ways to help the mental health system and help individuals with mental health conditions. And this law is not one of them. We think it's going to do more harm than good by far. And we're really concerned about the protection of people's rights and their privacy that this law clearly infringes on.
So perhaps the most controversial provision is the one that requires mental health professionals to report to local officials when they have reason to believe that patients could harm themselves or others. How expansive a law is this as you read it?
Well, it really gives mental health providers, it puts the burden on mental health providers to report. And as many have already said, and I know speakers earlier have said on your show, that there already is a requirement to report that we, if someone is a danger to themselves or others, there is, in every state, there's an inpatient treatment law that you can petition the hospital to get someone admitted, to get them help, as opposed to turn them over to law enforcement, which is what this law does, and restricts their rights.
So how does this add to that if there's already a requirement?
Well, this would add a requirement. The current requirement is the providers must get them into care if they're a danger to themselves or others, and they're not willing to voluntarily do so. So as this law reads, if someone voluntarily comes into their therapist's office, comes into their doctor's office and says, I'm having these thoughts of hurting myself or someone else, I would like help, I'd like to go to the hospital, I'd like to talk with you about a plan to help me get these thoughts out of my head, there still is an onus on mental health providers to go to law enforcement. So you can't there's the potential that mental health providers won't feel like they can keep these conversations mm-hmm. confidential and that they can't use treatment to help folks rather than bringing them into law enforcement.
Well, they could use treatment. In addition, they're not turning them in for arrest. They didn't commit a crime. But do you think people who do acknowledge feelings like that should own guns?
I think that they have the right. I don't, I think that the unintended consequences of this is that people who value having their guns for whatever reason, whether it's for sport or if they feel they need to protect themselves, whatever those reasons are that people have, that this is going to deter them from getting help when they need it. And I think that that's the major scare. And we have far more suicides in this country every year than homicides. I think this is very much going to affect people who are having thoughts of hurting themselves, that they're not going to come into a doctor's office or into their therapist.
Maybe it'll go the other way, because the majority of gun deaths in this country actually are suicides. And so if the guns get taken out of the hands of some of those people, which is what the New York State law allows for, actually having the authorities confiscate the weapons of people who are deemed to be a threat to themselves or others if they're gun permit holders, maybe there'll be fewer suicides.
I think that what is more likely to happen is that people are going to be less likely to come in and get treatment, and therefore they're not going to get the help they need to prevent this, these sorts of suicides. So instead of going into a doctor's office and saying, I'm having problems, can you help me get into treatment, they're going to try to deal with these problems on their own, and we're going to see more suicides. I think that it really has the unintended consequences of pushing people out of treatment.
Listeners, we can take your calls on this. As you hear, there is pushback from the mental health community against some of the provisions in the new New York State gun law passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Cuomo yesterday. 212-433-WNYC, if you want to get in on this, 212-433-9692. Or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. I imagine we'll have a very active comments page on this. So you can go join that discussion at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And Anne in Greenwich, you're on the air. Anne, thank you for calling.
Hi. Suicide is not a crime, while murder is a crime. I don't understand why it's reasonable to group them together under the law like this. I just feel as if deterring people who have suicidal thoughts from seeking help, as this certainly would, is a very bad thing. And I feel that we should separate the two categories.
Thank you very much. And Sarah Steverman from the group Mental Health America, do you share that concern? Do you think that's an abstract concern or a concern with practical implications?
We do have that concern. I do have that concern that those are grouped together. And we also have concerns that just thinking about something, thinking about a crime, implicates people. And that there are many people think about hurting themselves or they think about hurting other people, and they don't end up doing it. The vast majority, you know, don't end up acting on that, especially when they're able to discuss with a professional how to cope with those feelings, how to cope with those stresses in their lives. So I do think that coupling those together is very unfair, but we also have to think about what this says to our society about people with mental health conditions more broadly, that it really criminalizes people's illnesses and it discriminates against people, and it furthers the stigma that we have been perpetuating in our community by linking violence and mental illness.
I want to replay part of a call that we got last hour on this from a therapist. This is Val in Rego Park who called in, and here's her concern with how she would have to apply this provision in her practice.
I don't think there's any patient who at some time during their therapy doesn't say, I would like to kill blank, blank. That doesn't mean they're going to do it. And you have to be very careful not to get people in trouble who are just expressing a wish rather than the fact of actually doing it.
But Sarah Steverman, if you have a good therapist, like it sounds like on first blush Val is, who can make those distinctions, and they have the leeway under the law to make those distinctions, shouldn't they report somebody like a Jared Loughner or a James Holmes or an Adam Lanza if they see that kind of potential in them? Shouldn't they need to?
Well, I think you're making the assumption that mental health providers, as good as a mental health provider can be in treating and understanding their patients, they really are unable to predict dangerousness. This is an underlying assumption of this law that is just not true.
Really?
Yes. There really is, you know, people have looked at this, and I think most mental health providers would agree that you can have some sense of someone's level of seriousness around their thoughts, but as far as something like a mass shooting, it's almost impossible to predict acts such as those.
So if a therapist has the thought, oh my God, this guy really could go off. He could be the next movie theater shooter or something like that. What should a therapist be required to do? Or what should a therapist be allowed to do with respect to gun laws?
Well, if someone is
and they know, let's say they know that person owns an arsenal or
sure.
even a legal gun permit.
Sure. And that's something that that mental health providers ask in these discussions. That's something that they should ask, whether or not a person has whether it's suicide or homicidal thoughts, whether they have some sort of plan and a means to carry out that plan. But they are able to bring someone to the hospital. There's a procedure in every state, as I said, to get them involuntarily committed, and then at that point. That person is, and the New York law includes that person is then entered into the database. They're flagged and checked for guns. That would be the proper way to go about doing this. And one of the reasons is because there are assessments along the way that are not included in this law. So there's at no point after the mental health provider alerts the authorities, there's no point when that person is assessed again, where that person has the ability to be checked out by a neutral party. Whereas on the hospital and inpatient treatment, there is that ability for people. There's that requirement that someone is assessed by, mm-hmm. A licensed practitioner at the hospital, and then are reassessed periodically to ensure that they are getting the appropriate treatment and aren't being retained in the hospital when they don't need to be.
Paul in Union, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling, Paul.
Hi. I just have a comment. I've been a legal gun owner for many years, and if I ever felt the need to see a mental health professional, I would not do it because I would not want to lose my freedom and I would not want to lose my right to own firearms. So these laws are a very bad idea. You dissuade people from seeking treatment.
Paul,
that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, Sarah Stieverman, is there an odd couple coalition now of the NRA and mental health patient advocate groups like yours? They don't want people's access to guns restricted because they're for guns. You don't want to limit it for the sake of patients' rights. But either way, you're arguing for risk on the side of more guns in the hands of more unstable positions for the interest of your own political positions.
Well, we are not against common sense gun registration. We haven't come out with a position on specific gun control proposals, but we aren't against public health approaches to reducing gun violence. We know that this is a problem. What we are against is specifically targeting people with mental health conditions. Even though we know that that having a mental health condition alone is not a predictor of violence, we have that evidence that we have numerous studies that have been published in peer-reviewed journals that show that. And our concern is really what the previous caller said, that there are going to be unintended consequences to this. The NRA, they're okay with having registries of people with mental illnesses, which we don't support. So I think that there are commonalities that we can find with a lot of with supporters on all sorts of sides of this issue, and I think that we think that reducing gun violence, reducing violence more generally, is a priority for us because we haven't talked much about the effects of gun violence and the effects of violence, but the trauma that's involved with that people experience when they experience violence can lead to mental health problems. We know that for sure. So reducing violence is certainly a priority for us, but I wouldn't say that we have a similar position to NRA. We're open to many solutions, but not ones that discriminate against people with mental health conditions and ones that deter people from receiving treatment.
Ralph in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hi, Ralph.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I got three quick points, and the first one I'm going to try to say is respectfully as I can, but, you know, I really don't see much difference between your guest and a spokesman for the NRA. I mean, basically, they're arguing for the status quo and for nothing that will help try to resolve this problem. Number two is that if this law were in place, I strongly believe Sandy Hook wouldn't have happened. There were people who knew that that kid had problems, and I'm sure he had seen one or two therapists. And if they had gone into the home...
We don't know, by the way. We don't know about him having been in therapy, but go ahead.
But I suspect that this was not an original problem. And then number three is, you know, therapists can't guarantee that, okay, they've got a kid with a problem or a person who's got these problems. They can't guarantee that they're not going to go out and do something. But if we go in and take their guns, they don't have the guns. They can't shoot anyone. They can't shoot themselves. They can't shoot anyone. So in the interest of the status quo, she's arguing, oh, let's not do this law. But, you know, it's kind of what like Obama says. If we can just save one, I think it's worth at least rolling it out there and see what happens.
Ralph, thank you very much. So are you afraid, Sarah, that mental health professionals might get into some kind of legal trouble for not reporting people if they make a judgment call that a situation is not reportable and then that person goes out and shoots somebody?
Yeah, that is one of our concerns about this law. The language states that if a mental health provider makes the call in good faith, that they won't be open to criminal or civil liability. But that language isn't clear. It doesn't, it doesn't prevent a distraught, rightly distraught, victim's family member from pursuing some sort of action against that provider. I don't know if you saw this morning, the therapist of the shooter in Aurora has a civil case against her that I think was just initiated this week. The question is whether or not mental health providers will err on the side of safety, protecting themselves, and report any sort of inkling that they have about people.
We're almost out of time, and obviously this is just beginning. It's, I think, unfortunate from many good government groups' positions, whether or not they support the content of the law, that this was rushed through by the governor, suspending the usual rules for several days of debate, which did not take place before it was voted on. And so the public in New York State was not allowed to have the kind of conversation that we're having right now before the bill was voted on. This conversation is just starting, however, on the national level. Do you have reason to believe that when we hear from President Obama and Vice President Biden in about a half hour with their proposals, that there will be something very similar to this provision in their federal proposals?
We are hoping not, of course. We do know, though, that other states are considering similar provisions or worse from our perspective. So we're watching this carefully, and we are going to continue to work to dispel this assumption that that these are ways that we can protect our communities. And as the previous caller, I just disagree with him vehemently that we do think that there are common sense approaches to reducing gun violence and that we're very supportive of. But we do think that this is going to deter people from getting help.
Do you think there could be a positive side effect to this law, that there will be expanded access to mental health treatment, which is usually your number one priority? If people are considering it so important to be able to match people at risk of gun violence and their gun permits through the mental health system. Is this going to wind up in more access to more mental health care for more people?
We're not sure. Of course, this expands Kendra's law. It requires people to stay committed to outpatient treatment for longer. Although we don't support those types of involuntary outpatient commitment laws as well at Mental Health America. What we would like to see expanded is outpatient voluntary services, welcoming systems that that people are able to access easily and obtain services in their communities that are recovery focused and consumer friendly.
Now, listeners, if you want to continue to have this conversation, I mentioned before, you can do so on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. A lot of people are posting. But I also want to let everybody who's interested in this aspect of the gun law debate know what we've put up there for you to read. We've posted the full text of the New York State bill, and we've annotated the key provisions related to mental health. So you can go there and read the actual language of the bill related to seizing weapons, mandating reporting on the part of doctors and other mental health professionals, and expanding what is known as Kendra's Law. We have the annotated bill with reference to the mental health provisions on our page. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Again, we will cover the president and vice president's announcement with their gun proposals, expected in about a half hour. And we thank Sarah Steverman, director of state policy for the mental health advocacy group, Mental Health America. Thank you so much for coming on again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, data geek Charles Whelan, author of Naked Statistics, Stripping the Dread from Data. His great collection of number-oriented stories includes how a beer company fooled much of America with a data trick during a Super Bowl commercial. And he'll tell us which is more dangerous statistically, a gun in the house or a swimming pool in the backyard. Stay with us.